Tonight I was going to be speaking about family and lineage on the spiritual path. So I'm going to be talking about the importance of both of these, and I'll be explaining what I mean by these as we move on. I want to start the talk kind of in a different place, though. I want to share with you actually a dream I had. There's a dream I had when I was in Santa Fe and this talk first came to me. Dreams are such strange things. They contain so much, and they contain much more than I can share or explain. And so I thought I'd share this dream with you. The setting of the dream was this huge room, and within this room there was all these people milling around, and the Zen master I had practiced with was sitting in the corner, sitting in a chair, just observing everything that was going on. So here he is, all these people milling around. And on one side of the room, there was this strange thing. It was like this entity, and it wasn't like it didn't have like a clear, distinct form. It was like this entity that had this moving quality to it, and it had this kind of orangish, reddish quality to it. And the wild thing was is that people were going up in front of this entity, and they would come face to face with it. And they were trying all kinds of things. And what they were trying to do is they were trying to come face to face with it and not disappear. Because what would happen is they would try something, but then they would disappear. And the feeling was is we would never see them again. So that was it. And then somebody else would come up in front of this thing, and they would try their thing, their shtick, and see what they could do in an attempt not to disappear, but they would disappear as well. And this was the situation. People trying things, coming face to face with whatever this was and disappearing. And of course, again, the Zen master is just in the corner observing all of this. And there was this underlying feeling that all of us in the room, everybody there, we were going to have to come face to face with this. We didn't have a choice. We're going to have to come face to face with this and maybe try something, but we'd probably disappear. I don't think anybody really wanted to disappear, but there was this attempt not to disappear. And so I had this feeling, you know, inside of myself, that this palpable feeling that I was going to have to come face to face with this entity. And given all my years of spiritual practice and all of that, the idea of coming face to face with this entity, what I decided is, I thought, well, might as well go to the beach right now. I'm going to try to put this off as long as possible. So that's what I started to do. I started trying to get ready to go to the beach. We don't have to examine this too closely, please. So I was getting my things ready to go to the beach, and it was nice because one of the things I wanted to do is I wanted to see my siblings. So I saw my siblings, luckily, which was nice, and I was saying goodbye to them. And again, the Zen master is just observing all this. And before I left, the most fascinating thing happened. So I was going out, I was trying to get out at least, to go to the beach. And something came face to face with this entity that looked completely different, that was actually radically different. It was like this archetypal image of family coming to face with this entity. So really what it was all these people holding hands, but it had this feeling of family. So it was an individual, but embodied family. And when it came face to face with this entity, everyone reappeared. And there was no more of this disappearing any longer. So there was something about this quality of family, stretching up beyond the individual, that really had a power to it. Changed everything. Again, who knows? It's a dream. How do I explain it? But somehow, I felt that it fits into this talk in some way. But that's for you to figure out, to get a sense of. Again, the title of the talk is Family and Lineage on the Spiritual Path. And my intention tonight is to speak about how both healing and awakening, these two topics that I've been speaking about while I've been here, they're not just about our own lives. It's not just about my life, healing and awakening. That they reach much farther than just our own lives. That they're somehow intertwined with family. And I'm not just talking about family of origin, but a kind of family that extends well beyond our family of origin. And I want to mention a few things that might help us get a sense of this sense of a feeling sense of family, and getting a sense of that this is what healing and awakening is all about. Probably to put it more simply, I'm just going to be telling you a bunch of stories. And my hope is that they'll help your practice or inform your practice in some way along these lines. So let's begin with the realm of healing. And I want to begin with the story of a woman who was engaged, deeply engaged in the process of healing. And this woman had been in a number of abusive relationships. And what was going on is there was this cycle. She'd get in an abusive relationship, stick around for a while, and then finally extricate herself, only to find herself back into a similar relationship. So it was this cycle, really this vicious cycle. But gradually, as she continued to with her healing process, this began to change when she really began to truly and deeply heal, where she started to step out of this dynamic. And it was so fascinating what she started to begin to realize, because what she began to realize when she started to get a space from it and free from this dynamic was that this was a dynamic that basically stretched back for generations and generations in some form or another. So she started to have this feeling of stopping a dynamic that went beyond her own life, that really stretched back for a long time. And she would have fascinating dreams. These dreams, and really, this really fit into her worldview too. This worldview and having these dreams of having a palpable sense of feeling supported by ancestors, especially the women of her family. And she got this feeling of this pride that they had, the women of her family that stretched back for generations, that somehow they were being healed by the healing that she was doing. Yeah, so a kind of healing that extended, that really extended beyond her separate sense of self and was intertwined with a sense of family. Amazing, isn't it? Healing has that type of power. And some of you might have had that palpable feeling when you've really engaged in healing, that it extends beyond just your life. We're more than these separate individuals. Have you noticed? We carry our families along with us. And I'm sure you've noticed this. Have you noticed how many times healing is really coming to terms with our family of origin? That can be often one of the things that's a part of the healing process. And that's why the big test for a practice. What's the big test for your practice? Go home. Then you see how deep your practice is. It's because we're carrying our families within us. We carry our families along. We carry the unhealthy stuff, the woundedness, the hurts and pains that are passed on from generation to generation, probably in some form or another, just like in that story I told you of that woman. And when you heal, when you really engage on this spiritual path that brings healing, those long-enduring dynamics of suffering, they stop. We stop carrying them around. And what a cool thing. Can you imagine that? Stopping the momentum of something that's been going on for generations and generations. That's the power of healing. So those of you who are engaged in healing, you're doing a really cool thing. You're stopping something that has been needed to be stopped for a long time. We carry our families within us, though, in another way, too. It's not only the bad stuff, right? And I think that's the other thing that we have to really notice on this path when we're engaged in healing, is all the wholesome things or the good things that we get from our families. Really important to notice that, to have gratitude for those things. And have you noticed that when you really begin to engage in your healing process, that sometimes those really pop up, that you really get to see the things that you've inherited that have helped you along your path of healing, along your spiritual path? Maybe it's the values that you were given, the struggles that came before you that brought you to where you are. For example, a few things that came from my family that I'm so grateful for. Like I had a grandmother who was a German Jew who married into a Catholic family. Not the easiest situation. And not only that, she was living in Illinois. Very conservative. Actually, it was the home of Ronald Reagan, and it was very conservative. And, you know, some of the stuff that she did, I was so fascinated with. There was a number of Korean families that ended up moving into the small town that was there. And she spent a lot of time teaching English to the adults of the Korean families. And a lot of it was because she really wanted to help them out, especially this group of people that really didn't fit in. And I think it was because of the oppression that she felt, and also of never fitting in, that she really wanted to support other people in that position. What a cool thing. What a cool value. To value those voices that are not heard, that so many times get left on the sidelines. And she learned that from what she had gone through with her Jewish tradition. And luckily, I think she passed some of that on to my father. My father, he once told me that his greatest hero was Oscar Romero, Archbishop Romero, who many of you, I hope, know. You know, that archbishop who really fought or really spoke out for all those oppressed people in El Salvador and actually was murdered as a result. So what a wonderful thing to inherit. I'm grateful for that. But the thing is we carry even more than our families with us. We carry more than this lineage of our families. We also carry the lineage of this place that you live, this country that you live in. You carry the lineage of the culture or cultures that you've come into. So we carry those wounds, those unhealthy tendencies, these collective wounds, these collective unhealthy tendencies. For example, from this country, what do we carry as Americans? Have you noticed what we carry? We carry the history of slavery and other forms of oppression. And the state of New Mexico, the history here, the history of conquest and subjugation. But also the good stuff, like I was talking about in terms of our families. Have you noticed we carry that as well? We carry the relative political and personal freedom that's been bestowed upon us by living in this country. We carry all of it. And we carry even more than this. This, I think, comes out in a poem by Wendell Berry, a poem of his entitled History. And in this poem, the speaker in this poem is speaking about his connection with the land, with the earth herself. He says, "All the lives this place has had, I have. I eat my history day by day, bird, butterfly and flower pass through the seasons of my flesh. I dine and thrive on offal and old stone, and am combined within the story of the ground, the story of the ground I walk on. By this earth's life, I have its greed and innocence, its violence and its peace." Do you hear that? That he's saying that he's carrying the life of the earth within him. Its greed and innocence, its violence and its peace. He carries the good stuff that we get from the earth herself, how it supports us. But have you noticed we also carry the violence that's been done to her, the environmental degradation. We carry all this with us. This is our lineage. This is our family. And what I'm pointing out is that when we engage in healing, that reverberates in all of these realms. So when you begin to stop carrying these collective unhealthy wounds and unhealthy tendencies, it can reverberate in all these different realms that I just mentioned. So you hearing this? Healing goes well beyond your separate sense of self. It really is about this broader sense of family. That's where it's happening, this practice. I feel like this perspective of healing can give us a different story around the story that we're given in this practice, the story of rebirth, the story of reincarnation. It's always a tricky story, I've noticed. Now, everybody has their own view of how it is. So I just want to offer another story, not that this is the story. It's always good to have many stories, not just one story. Because the question is what stops getting reborn? What comes to an end? Because when the Buddha spoke about awakening or this path, it was all about bringing an end to birth. So what stops getting born? Someone asked Chogyam Trungpa, what gets reincarnated? And he said, your bad habits. Which I thought was very true. It's not good. Huh? But I feel like this view of healing gives us a different view of rebirth. Because when we truly heal, what do we bring an end to? What never gets born again are those tendencies those unhealthy tendencies that we inherited. What a cool thing to stop. That in this lifetime, in my lifetime, I can bring an end to those. That they'll never be born again. As the Buddha said, birth is destroyed and the holy life has been lived. Can you destroy the birth of those things within your spiritual practice? Do you know how powerful that is to destroy birth in that sense? To bring an end to those things being born again and again and again? Now I want to say a few things about this realm of awakening. Again, getting a broader sense that awakening truly is not just about this separate sense of self that you got, but is really about this broader sense of family. And I want to begin by sharing with you a piece from Joanna Macy's memoir. And this is something that she wrote about. She was on this takes place on an Indian train. I don't know if any of you have traveled around India and ridden on the trains. It's quite an experience. they're packed with people, and it's actually a rich experience. So imagining, please imagine that she's on this train with all of these people. And what she is she's probably lying. There's these little bunks that you can get where you're kind of lying up above all the people below you on the train. So there's sometimes these little platforms that you can lie on. And she's on one of these. And she begins, she says, "Directly beneath me, a large, garrulous family unpacked an endless series of containers, thrust up redolent wads of rice, curry, melting banana. Accepting a chapati, I drew up my feet and disappeared behind a book. I wanted to effect as total a withdrawal as possible, while the light still permitted me to read. I wanted to banish from my mind the last half hour and erase the whole teeming full carriage of humanity, its jabber and clamor and smells." Then she continues to read the book. But I just want to be clear. Do you hear what she's going on? It's too much for her. She wants to really withdraw from all this. But then she continues, and then something else happens here. It's really quite striking. She says, "My breathing deepened, each breath filling more of my body as if to ground and steady me for a physical challenge. My mind stilled in wonder, for the thing that then occurred seemed outside of its control." It was fascinating. She says, "Suddenly I was no longer enclosed inside my own body, but I wasn't outside it either. It seemed to be silently exploding, expanding to the point where everything else was inside it too. Everything out there, each gesticulating, chewing, sleeping form, each crying baby and coughing heap of rags, and the flickering, swaying carriage itself was as intimately my body as I was. I turned inside out like a kernel of popcorn shaken over the fire. My interior was now on the outside, inextricably mixed with the rest of the world. And what I tried to exclude was now at its core." Do you hear this? Striking, huh? Really, this breaking through this separate sense of self to this broader sense of family, this broader sense of connection, this flavor of awakening. So again, we go beyond this personal sense of self with awakening into this broader connection with a broader family, you could say. And then one more description that I feel like fits into this. And this comes from the Flower Garland Sutra, the Avatamsaka Sutra. And some of you might know of this image of Indra's net. Do you know this image of Indra's net? It's a striking image. So the image is of this net. And it's a net that goes out in all directions infinitely. And but at each node of the net is this jewel. At each node is this jewel that reflects every single other jewel in the net infinitely. So you could, no matter where you go in on this net, wherever you are in the universe around this net, if you look into the jewel, there will be reflected every other jewel that's there, infinite, right? So that even in the smallest of things is everything, and in every single thing you can find everything. This quality of interconnectedness, endless interconnectedness. One of the things I love about this image, which I think is so wonderful that we can get from Indra's net, is that I think, and this is really important for our sitting practice, for our meditation practice and whatever practice that we're involved in, that whatever you're doing in your practice, if that's the case, this image, it's going to reverberate in all different kinds of realms. There's no way it can't. Sometimes we can feel that we live in some kind of vacuum. Sorry, that just isn't the case. What you do or what you not do has reverberations. And again, I'm not trying to try to create some kind of idea that just by sitting we're going to solve all the world's problems, or all that positive energy is going to take away all the ills of the world. I think that's childish thinking. But I do feel that what we're doing, it leads to more peace and equanimity and love in the midst of this difficulty, because it's all connected. And so sometimes practitioners will come to me and there'll be this worry that they're being really self-centered. Here I am meditating and here's the world out there and it's falling to pieces. What good is this? And sometimes people struggle with this sense of, wow, this practice is only about me. There's this self-centered quality to it. And what I'm trying to point out is that it's impossible for it to be just about you. So no matter how hard you try to be self-centered, you might want to try it. Try to be as self-centered as you can and sit more and more and more. And you'll notice that it's going to have an effect around you. You can't stop that. That's just a delusion that you're here in some kind of bubble. And this is really important for our practice, because the other thing that we can gain from this, which I find so helpful, is all that stuff that's arising in your life that's so difficult, it actually has nothing to do with you. It really doesn't. I know it feels like it has everything to do with you, but I'm here to break the news to you. It has nothing to do with you. It's just what you've inherited. It's the causes and conditions that have kind of ripened and come together and coagulated into this thing that you think is a self. It's your inheritance. It's not a very nice inheritance at times, but I have found that a lot of times it can be such a release. Have you noticed the relief when you get to see that it really has nothing to do with you? It's just these causes and conditions that come. It can be a big relief. And I don't mean to say this in a way that absolves us of our responsibility, but it gives us a broader view of what happens in your life. And when we engage in this practice, it can allow this broader view to really percolate into what you're going through. I want to give just one example of this, of how this arises. For example, self-criticism is such a huge thing, or beating up on ourselves. And there really is, it's important to see that there's a whole history of this. It's something that's in this modern society that you're in, that you've inherited. It could be from your family that you've inherited. And so you have this condition that's there, this condition that's just kind of sitting there. And then you put in that mixture, maybe, you know, something difficult goes on at work, a little bit of friction with a friend, didn't eat very well today, and then you're kind of tired, and ta-da! It's the perfect recipe for self-criticism that just kind of pops up and it feels like it overwhelms you. And what I'm trying to point out, it actually doesn't have anything to do with you. Those are the causes and conditions that allows it to flower, the conditions are there. It's kind of like you mix all the ingredients in there, you put it in the oven, and ta-da, you get the perfect recipe for a horrible day of self-criticism. But again, it really has nothing to do with you. But the cool thing is that when we do this practice, especially the meditation practice, when you're simply being aware and being present with what's going on, it's kind of like you turn off the oven. So there's still all those ingredients, and they get mixed up, because those are the causes and conditions. But what I notice is that at least the ingredients get to stay a little more fluid. They don't harden into an actual crusty loaf that causes so many problems in our lives. And then they can kind of trickle on out into other ingredients or dissipate out. So we can see that it has nothing to do with me, and that when I stop it that way, then it can flow through. So we're stopping those old crusty pieces of bread loaves from forming. They don't get born anymore. So again, this broader sense of this practice. And now I want to share with you some things that can really, I find, are very helpful to help cultivate this feeling of going beyond a separate sense of self in our practice. And how to actually bring in this sense of, what you could say, a broader sense of family, a broader sense of what this practice is all about. But one of the things that I found most helpful with this is getting the feeling that this spiritual path you're on is, in some ways, it's about entering into a different family. So when you enter into this spiritual path, you're entering into a different family. You're entering into a different lineage. And it's a lineage that doesn't necessarily exclude our family. It doesn't exclude our family of origin. But I want to point out that it's a different lineage that you're entering, and that it's a different kind of family. It's a lineage of awakening. I remember the first time I really got a palpable sense of this. This is when I got ordained. And part of the ordination ceremony, and actually my parents were there, so this made it even more powerful. Part of the ordination ceremony, actually the beginning of it, I remember being a monk too, because whenever anybody got ordained, you'd always hope that you'd get kind of a seat so you could see the look on the parents' face. Because it was such an intense experience for parents to be there with their child getting ordained, you know, their head getting shaved and going off to this weird life. And the first part of the ordination was I would go over, and my parents were sitting, and I would bow down to them. I would bow down to their feet, which is an incredibly powerful thing for both child and parent, especially sometimes more so in kind of white American culture, because we don't bow down to each other. And so here I was bowing down to my parents, which was a powerful moment. And I felt like it was embodying two things. One was it was embodying gratitude. I was grateful that they had given me the life that I had. I was incredibly grateful. And it was a way of expressing that I was bowing myself down in gratitude. But I was also bowing down to them as a way of acknowledging that I was entering a different family. Not a family that was excluding my family of origin, but I really was entering a different lineage in a different family. And it was an embodiment of that. It's something that you might want to reflect on. When you do this practice, really you're entering this lineage of spiritual practitioners that extends back thousands of years. And you enter and you rely on this bigger spiritual family that in a sense all of us come from. And this is important because so many times we feel like we rely on the Buddha, whoever that was. More precisely, we rely on thousands of years of practitioners who brought us this practice. Why do we have this practice? Because there's been people that have been practicing it. Not because there's some book with the Buddha's words in it. It's been because people have been keeping this alive. And that's your lineage. That's your lineage when you practice. So awakening also has a lineage. In Zen, this is a really big deal. You find it mostly in the Zen tradition. And I think it's so that we can get this feeling of a family on this level. You put it very well. This is from, there are these koan collections in the world of Zen, and one is called the Mumonkan, the gateless barrier, the gateless gate. In the first case, this is in the preamble to this first case. And it says, when you pass through this barrier, and it's this barrier that is no barrier, so the gateless gate, when you pass through this gateless gate, you will not only interview Joju, this Zen master that this first case is about intimately, you will walk hand in hand with all the ancestral practitioners in the successive generations of our lineage, the hair of your eyebrows entangled with theirs, seeing with the same eyes and hearing with the same ears. Won't that be fulfilling? Is there anyone who would not want to pass this barrier? So when we pass the gateless gate, when we move into awakening, that's what we get, is we have this intimacy, this complete intimacy. I see with the same eyes of all those practitioners that came before me. I hear with the same ears, the ears of awakening, the eyes of awakening. I feel like it's really important to get this in our bones. So many times you might notice what's really instilled in us is more the sense of individuality that can really separate us.